You were evacuated?
We were evacuated to Froxfield. My father came out of the army in 1947, and we moved down into Petersfield, where in 1948 I had a younger sister born, and then in 1950 my younger brother was born. I met my husband in Petersfield at a Territorial Army dance. At Drill Hall in Petersfield. It was all very sort of proper. He had to ask my mum and dad, because I went with mum and dad to this dance, could he walk me home? And from we were married in 1956.
And his name?
And his name is Alan Charles Pierce. And in fact, they were, his mother and father were evacuated from London, Wandsworth, London, to Petersfield during the war. And his father worked on the British Rail, and he was in what they called a reserve occupation, would it be called? Because he was an electrician on the railway, so he didn't actually go into the services. He had spent all his time on the railway. And my husband was a clerk, booking clerk, on the British Rail, which it was then. And so we married in 1956. And moved up to a little village called Rake near Liss, and we had rooms up there. And then in 1957, our son, first son, was born.
His name?
His name is Kevin Charles Pierce. And we heard of a station house at Rowland's Castle was vacant. It was a station master's house, which wasn't going to be used for a station master anymore because they, well, probably didn't want station masters in a small village station. So we actually rented the station house at Rowland's Castle, and that was from 1959, when our son Kevin was 2 years old. My husband used to work away. He worked from Havant. He was by then what I called a relief clerk, and he worked all over the area from Havant right through to Waterloo and the branch lines. The Guildford branch line, he worked as far afield as Ascot. So he had long, long days, caught the first train out of the morning. So we really didn't see him that much, really. Then being in Rowland's Castle for those early on, being up at the station, didn't really get involved with Rowland's Castle too much because you didn't, not until the children went to school. And in 1961, our first daughter, Carol, was born. And she was born in, actually, the station house.
Who delivered
her? Wasn't Nurse Monroe. Nurse Monroe was my midwife, but she was weekend off when Carol was born. And I can't remember the name of the other midwife. But after Carol was born, then I began to get more into the way of the village life at Rowland's Castle. There used to be a welfare up at the village hall. And the health visitor, I can't remember her name either, but she recommended that we went up there, and we always, all the mothers should assemble in this hall and have our babies weighed. And you could get your milk powder, cod liver oil, and orange juice. Do you remember all that? And then by going up there, I began to meet people in the village, and I made a friend. And then 3 years later, our second daughter was born, Diane. But she was delivered by Nurse Monroe. And, well, Kevin started school when he was five, up at the St. John's School. And now it is private housing. It was a very old school, and it belonged to the church then. And it was, just across the road from St. John's Church. And then I sort of began to meet many more people in the village. And as they grew older, of course, they have things to do. They go dancing classes and the walk up and down the hill, the houses weren't there then in King's Close. There was a college called
Stansted.
Stansted, yes. And it was an almshouse. There were almshouses. And it's a pity that was pulled down because it was a beautiful, beautiful building. And we sort of saw King's College Close being built. Then after, in 1968, my youngest Raymond was born. He was born in the station house again, and with Nurse Monroe in attendance, and also Dr. Ashworth. And just like, I'll tell you about the actual station house now. People don't realise that my entrance to our house at station was past what is the booking hall, and is at the very end of the building. And you went into the, that's just the one door, and you're faced with a very long passage. And on the right-hand side, there was the kitchen, big kitchen with a fireplace in it.
That overlooked the railway.
And that was, it didn't overlook the railway, it was had it overlooked a little bit of garden. And then a bit further on, there was, from the passage, at the foot of the stairs, there was a room to the right and a room to the left. And the room to the left overlooked the station platform. That, in fact, was a room where Raymond was born. And the room on the right was where Carol and Diane were born. And before that, there was what was, we always used to call it the spare kitchen. The children always called it a spare kitchen because it's probably years ago that's what the that's where the kitchen was, because there was a very, very shallow butler sink in there. It was never taken away. And I used to put the pram in there. And a bit off, then behind that was just our bathroom. When I first moved there, there was just a bath and a toilet in the bathroom. There was no hand basin. I had to ask for that once the children got a bit older and I needed more washing facilities. And the stairs were 21 stairs up, and it went above the booking hall. And there were three bedrooms upstairs, one huge one and two fairly decent sized ones. And so there was one, two, three, four roofs. Roofs for the bedrooms, a roof for the room on the platform side, and a roof for the room on the roadside, and the kitchen and bathroom roofs. But halfway up the stairs, there was an attic. Well, we called it an attic, or an attic, so always in the roof of, I suppose it was in the roof of the sitting room. And massive area, and the children always used to like going in there, because it's like a little room. They used to call it the attic. I couldn't say attic, it's always the attic. And we didn't have a garden or anything, you know, but of course when we first moved there, there was still the railway lines in the goods yard, because and the buffers and everything were there, because there still used to be a steam train come down for the goods. And also at the very far end of the goods yard, they still had a coal yard where Mr. Rawlings had his coal, and he delivered coal from there. So the trains obviously delivered the coal. So you forget all this, but yes, it was, and my son used to love, you know, sort of going out and seeing the delivery vans and from the goods yard and everything, you know. So it was a very, very cold house to live in, very cold. Because imagine, no central heating in those days, and rattly sash windows. But listening to the trains, you didn't hear the trains. Because if you think about it, the trains drew in and drew out. And there was only two fast trains that sort of rattled through during the hour. But because the Rowan's Castle, if you ever look at it, Rowan's Castle Railway is on a bend. It comes in a bend from Haven across the arches at the end of Finchdene Road into the village. And because they had to slow down to come round that bend, it wasn't as fast as it would have been had we lived on a straight piece of rail.
Yeah.
But in 1977, when we had this rail crash, a goods wagon came down from Butser. Yeah, they were doing works through the night. And this goods van came rattling down, and with a crane on it, I don't know what else was on there, but it crashed into Rowan's Castle Station. And we were all in bed, and we had my mother staying with me at that time, and she was sleeping in the room on the platform side. It was a stormy night, and it was sort of thunder and lightning a bit. And I sort of heard this, and I thought, oh, it's thunder and lightning. And realised, obviously, it wasn't. But people had come down before I'd even got out of my bed from the fairway, because they had heard it. Now, they used to hear the trains more than I heard the trains, because the sound travelled, you see. So they're all in my garden. I was in my dressing gown, husband and children, and to seeing what has gone on. I think it was an August night. I'm sure it was August. And I know it was that very hot summer we had, which was 1977. And that was the year before my husband died. My husband died in 1978. And that was in November the 28th, 1978. And I could have stayed at the station house if I wanted to. The railway people, I didn't have to come out from the house, but they said if I wanted to move, they would see I was rehoused. And it was a very lonely place up at the station there. And because I was on my own then, and once the children were in bed, it got very, very lonely and very sort of frightening, really, because every movement you thought, who's that walking past my window? And so they found me a house up at King's Way at Rowan's Castle, the council house up there. And I was there for another 7 years. That's when I moved. Yeah, so go back to the children when they're all growing up. They all took their bits in St John's Church. They were all baptised up there. Oh, no, Kevin wasn't, because he was baptised, he was a bit younger. But he was confirmed in St John's at Rowan's Castle, and the other three were all baptised and confirmed up there.
And the rector was?
And the rector was Reverend Force, the very first rector. Mm-hmm. And then we had Reverend, oh gosh, what's his name?
Stuart Dean?
No, yeah. Reverend Stone was the last one. Oh. Well, no, wasn't it? Now, Kevin was in the choir, and so were the girls. Raymond, bless his heart, couldn't sing in tune, so he was a server. And we always used to go up together to the 8 o'clock service, and we were there. So yes, we had a good time with the St John's Church. And of course, you know, the guides were sort of attached guides and brownies. And they were, all four of them were scouts and guides and brownies, and the girls did their dancing up at the church hall up there.
Who was the teachers?
Oh, I can't remember the names of the teachers. No. But yes, and they put on little shows down in the village hall, and village life was really very good, very sort of communal. Everybody sort of, well, when the children are at school, you get to know all the mums and that. And I was on the PTA of the Rowan's Castle School, and yes, I just can't sort of think of what else to say about that one. Yes, going back to all the children being in the guides and scouts and brownies, I got roped in to being a guide, and the way I got into that was, first of all, of course, your children belong to the movement and go. And being a parent, like I was on the PTA at the school, I was on the, what they called a local association, we called it the LA, Local Association for the Guides and Brownies, and really it was a support group for the parents to help with the Guides and Brownies. And I was treasurer of the LA. And through that, there was this vacancy shortage, really, of leaders for the Guides and Brownies. And there was they wanted somebody to help with the brownies. So, of course, that's how I got into being. I was a tawny owl with a second Rowan's Castle brownie pack, and my brown owl was Sally Dowsett. Now, she used to live up at Stubbermere, which is the Stansted estate. They moved away to another estate near Balcombe in West Sussex. The other brownie pack was run by Maya Adams, mm-hmm. and I think she had a couple of tawny owls with her, and I can't really remember who it was. June Hughes comes to mind, but I think she was more a guider. And the guiders were Jean Mullery, captain of the First Baron's Castle Guides, and Mary Williams was the lieutenant, and the Second Baron's Castle Guides was run by Captain Jewel MacDowell, and a person they called Woggy. Her name was Chris Mason. And the reason they called her Woggy was when they go to camp, they have to all have a theme. And remember one year, it was a Mrs. Pepperpot, it's a children's book, and they all had to make things for this, on the theme of the camp. And I don't quite know why it was Gollywogs, but Chris Mason made a lot of gollywogs, either for a biannual sale we did every 2 years for to raise funds for the LA, and she made these little knitted ones. I think that was it. And then from then she was called Woggy. And that was what it was.
And did they go to camp?
Oh yes, they went to camp. The guys went to camp at Stansted one year. And it was a beautiful year, ever so warm. And I remember my eldest daughter going up there, and really, it's still Ronan's Castle, but when you went to visit, you could have been miles away because it was so isolated and lovely up there, you know. And going back to 1977, when it was the Queen's Jubilee year, the guides and brownies all had a ceremony in Stansted Forest there, just inside, just by the sling, I think it is. And they planted an oak tree, which I ought to go and have a look and see if it's still there, and see how big it is. Yeah, well, all the guides, they go on their camp. Well, we did a brownie pack holiday, and we used to the odd overnight stay, and we went up to the guide and scout headquarters at Ronan's Castle with them one night. Now that was a real hilarious, there was mice in there at the time. I don't think any of us slept very well because we were frightened we were going to get run over with mice. But yeah, see, the guide camps were very, very good. That my girls thoroughly enjoyed the guide camps. I remember once we had a football match from the PTA at the St. John's School. And what happened was all the ladies dressed up as footballers, and the men dressed up as women. And it really, really was I don't know what the event was for, but it was to raise funds, obviously, because that's what the PTA was for. But that was a fun time to do that. So we all got involved. It was good. Right, so when the children left St. John's, well, before we do that, St. John's School, when Raymond and Diane were at the school, they moved to the new building, and helped them move all their boxes and things to the new school. So they weren't there for very long, really, but Kevin went on to, well, in fact, Kevin, Carol and Diane went on to Wakeford School, which was called Wakeford then. It's a brand. When Kevin went, he was the first year intake to this brand new comprehensive school, and all the children went there because we were promised wonderful things with a comprehensive education, and that he was the first group in, and the first year that they didn't do 11 plus. Some chose to still do 11 plus and go on to Haven College, but we chose. My friends, quite a few of us, our children would go to the new comprehensive at Wakeford's. Then Carol followed, and Diane followed. Kevin and Raymond, he didn't go to Wakeford's. He wanted to go to where his friends were going, to Oakland School at Waterlooville, mainly because that year, the year before his father had died, and his very best friend at junior school was going to go to Oakland's, and he was very, very upset and said things like, "It's not fair, all my friends, everybody leaves me." So I thought, well, I'll go and see Reverend Stone and see if we can't get him to go to Oakland with his friend, because his friend was a Catholic. And Reverend Stone recommended that, yes, he would, you know, we were churchgoers, and he could go to Oakland School. So Ray went to Oakland School. After Waitfords, Kevin went into sort of a building trade. He was training to be a quantity surveyor. And he didn't go to college to do that. He learnt on site, as it were. Carol went to Highbury College to do nursery nursing, and she got what was called then an NNEB and qualified for nursery nurse. Diane didn't. Diane's never. She didn't settle very well anywhere, and she ended up at IBM, doing office work at IBM. And Ray went into the army. So they all, you know, did their own thing, and Kevin ended up going to living in Spain. That's where he died in 2007, that's right. Carol worked as in a maternity ward at Tunbridge Wells Hospital, and then the Isle of Wight, St Mary's at Newport. And now she married and has got two girls who are 24, are they 24 and 22? So it goes on, doesn't it? And she works at a school, it's Tangmere School. And Diane married and had three children. And she now lives down in Devon. And Ray left the army, having married and had one son. And he now lives down in Bristol with his wife.
Ooh.